Welcome to Sports and a Slice of Life. And now, here's your host, Dave Lewis.
There aren't many times I get a chance to crackle-ate. Now's the time with Aaron Showtime Taylor, American Basketball Association and Venice Basketball League announcer. Hey, where'd you come up with that word, crackle-ate?
So that's something that E-40, Bay Area rapper, used to say back in the 90s. And, you know, a lot of stuff I do comes from the 90s because I'm a throwback in a sense, right? And a lot of the euphemisms and phraseology that I use comes from the 90s. But there's nothing wrong with using it now because it's almost like there's a whole new generation who either hasn't heard of it or hear it and don't really know where it comes from. So they're able to grasp onto it. And then you have some people that, you know, that are in our age bracket that love it when they hear it, that, you know, somebody's bringing it back, you know what I'm saying? So let's get crackling, you know, and, you know, just it's a throwback that everybody loves.
How would you use it in a game?
So it would have to be a team on a run. Let's say if somebody took a 17-7 run and they scored the last 12 or 13 points, right, especially if it's the home team. And I'm doing the play-by-play work for the home people, for the home team can hear me, right? Then it would be like, oh, man, they're getting crackling up in the heezy for sheezy tonight. It's going down for real, you know? And then a lot of things I've been doing, though, lately, though, I've been really listening to a lot of college students and listening to the music that they're listening to, right? And listening to millennials and the music that they're listening to and listening to the conversation, because I want to be able to incorporate where they're at as well as where people in my age group, which is Gen X, and try to blend them together so I can have an audience where I'm reaching both groups and those in between. Maybe there's somebody out there who may not really be interested in basketball, but they like hearing the play-by-play, and so I want to be able to attract those kind of people to the game as well.
For those who aren't familiar with Aaron's story, Showtime spent 26 years in prison. Armed robbery, we went back to 1994, robbing a furniture store. In fact, lucky to be alive and even surviving that robbery after getting shot in the face. Turned his life around, had a great opportunity to do PA for the Warriors. I know you want to be a play-by-play announcer, but you had a chance to do public address. And for those who aren't familiar with the story, talk about that relationship with the Warriors and how that cultivated and led to that opportunity back in April.
So when I got to San Quentin State Prison in December 2011, it was about a month after I was there, and people heard me doing play-by-play on the yard. And one of the guys named Isaiah Caldwell, who was a referee for the games when Bob Myers and Kurt Lakoff would come in and play. And so when he first told me, you know, that the Warriors come up there and play basketball, I'm like, stop bullshitting. Are you serious? The Warriors aren't coming up into no prison playing basketball. He's like, no, for real. And I'm going to introduce you to the general manager because I think he needs to hear you. And so for the whole time I had been in prison, I hadn't had audio equipment. And that first year I was at San Quentin when the Warriors came in, I didn't have audio equipment, right? Mark Jackson was the coach then. It was Draymond Green's rookie year. And so I'm standing on the sideline doing play-by-play, just projecting my voice like I'd been doing. And Mark Jackson heard it and came over and said, hey, man, I know some guys at ESPN. If they heard you, they'd be worried about their job, right? And so, I mean, that was really a confidence booster. But the next year, I was able to get some audio equipment from the public information officer. So when they came back, I didn't have to just project my voice. I could talk in a normal tone and use my normal voice then. And so from 2013 all the way through to 2018, every time Bob Myers came in, I would tell him, you know, this is a job interview for me. Every time you walk in here and come down that hill, I'm treating this like a live job interview. In 2017, when Larry Beal came in, I specifically showed my ass off because I'm like, okay, this is, you know, what's authority coming down the hill right now? And when I seen him, I said, are you on Channel 7? He said, yeah, you're Showtime Taylor. I heard all about you. I'm like, what? You heard about me. He was like, yeah, I heard a lot about you. I said, okay, well, don't worry. We got a third seat up on the dais for you. And so this is how the stories go, where this relationship evolves and gets bigger, right? Because Bob Myers and I weren't only just dealing with each other on the basketball court. in 2017 in December, we were also part of a sports and social justice forum together that was held inside of San Quentin with Dr. Harry Edwards over at, I think he was at Cal Berkeley at the time. He came over to the prison, and Robbie Gould from the 49ers and Eric Reed, who was in the kneeling controversy at the time, and Lewis Murphy, and the president of the San Francisco 49ers was there as well. So Bob Myers and I go beyond basketball. It goes into looking at things and having conversations that we started talking about, well, what does my future look like? You know, what role could I play in an organization such as the Golden State Warriors, or would I be connected to Kent Lake over with the Santa Cruz Warriors? The pandemic changed all of that, but the conversation still continued. Even when I became the sports editor at San Quentin News, I could legally send emails that were read by the public information officer first, but I would send emails over asking, could I get interviews with some of the players and whatnot? So it went beyond just play-by-play into personal and life business as well.
What did you do with the interviews with those guys, since you didn't have a professional outlet? Simply use those for the prison?
Well, see, San Quentin has a media center, and part of the media center is the San Quentin News. You can find it online at sanquentinnews.com, all one word. And so from March 2019 all the way until I was released in October 2020, I was the sports editor. I wrote for the sports department from January 2013 through November of 2014. And even before I wrote for San Quentin News in 2008, I created a newsletter on a level 3 prison called Sentinella called The Show. And what The Show did, The Show highlighted good plays and bad plays on the basketball court and the softball field, because I was running two leagues on a level 3 prison yard, right? A softball league and a basketball league. The basketball league that I ran, we ran 3 games a day, 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. And I did play-by-play for each one of those games. The games was the first to 19, right? And then the playoffs through the championship, it was the first to 31 points. But each game, I did play-by-play for. I hired statisticians, I hired referees, I hired a scorekeeper, right? And I hired somebody to write for the paper as well, because I couldn't do the play-by-play and turn around and write the story as well. So I hired a reporter. And so it's stuff like that. Those organizational skills that I used then on a higher security prison, that when I got to San Quentin, I was able to implement and use to help enhance the basketball program that they already had. And like I said, Raymond Ritter, the public relations official for the Warriors, and Bob Myers at the time, the general manager, all of this impressed them when they asked me about it. Who put this together? Who did this? Well, I did this and I did that, and I found a musical accent. You know, I'm making it a part of the overall sports program. So when we start talking about Aaron Showtime Taylor, there's a Showtime aspect to it. And you have to have not just the game, but, you know, even when you look at a game on television, there's people with their faces down in their phones. Even if they're at a championship basketball game, you know, they're looking at their phone. So people need something to help keep them focused on the game. And so I brought that along with me. And that's how, you know, the legend of Showtime began.
You know, in all the stories that I've seen and heard about you, I haven't heard as much about the organizational component of it, you know, the businessman part of it, just you rocking the mic.
Yeah, well, that's because a lot of people aren't really interested in it, because it doesn't have the same, you know, da-da, like, you know, this guy spent 26 years in prison and he got shot in the face during a robbery, and, you know, the rehabilitative process. All of those are cool. All of those are exactly how it happened. But the organizational structure is what really attracts people who are in business, because I also have a business called Elevated Entertainment, right? And it's on the same principles of business and organization. So if you want to have accurate stats in a place where you don't have computers and don't have access to computers, you actually have to hire people to keep stats. And so I would go out and I would find guys who I knew were sharp enough to stay focused during the game, right? And this was the pitch. Listen, I can get you pictures with Draymond Green, Kevin Durant, Steve Kerr, Mark Jackson, what's the Red Mamba's name? Brian Scalabrine, right? Willie Green. I can get you pictures with Ronnie Lott. I can get you pictures with Jim Harbaugh, but this is what I'm going to need you to do. I'm going to need you to keep points. I need to know how many shots this guy took and how many he made, right? You're not going to have to share your picture with a big crowd of people. It's just going to be you and Bob Myers, you and Draymond Green, you and Kevin Durant. And then I go to the photographer who worked in the media center and be like, look, these are the pictures that I want. I'm going to go to the store. I'm going to buy you 5 or 6 ice creams. I'm going to spend $30 or $40 on you, but I want you to get these photos for me for my statisticians, right? Then I find one of these young, talented rappers on the yard, and I go to them maybe a month before the game and be like, look, I don't want you to tell nobody what's going to happen. What's going on, Showtime? Between the first and the second quarter, I want you sitting right over here on this seat. I don't want you moving. You're going to have 90 seconds to bust a freestyle to a beat, and I want you to talk about the Golden State Warriors. Man, I got you. Okay, don't trip. This is how you're going to get paid. That night, you're going to be seen on whatever television show, on whatever TV station came in and recorded the game. So sometimes they would have KTVU come in. Other times you'd have ABC. I think we had CBS another year, right? And so these people can go look at themselves that night when they talk about how the Golden State Warriors coaching staff came to San Quentin. And now they see themselves on television. The following week when something goes on in the chapel, we're having a meeting about something. Now they're standing around bragging. Yeah, I was on ABC, you know. Did a rap about 90 seconds, you know. I was talking about Bob Myers and whatnot. You know. Yeah, I'm that guy, you know. But that's what it's about. You know, because they did their job, they made me sound better doing play-by-play because all I'd have to do is get a numbers update on a post-it. I have a color analyst who's still inside. His name is Damon Cook. He's at Solano State Prison. He and I worked together from 2013 to 2017, and he could break a play down as just as well as Hubie Brown or anybody else, right? And so that's what he did sitting next to me. And as much as I talk, he knew right when to jump in so I could be quiet.
How much of what you're doing now and want to do is inspired by those guys that are still behind bars?
Everything. If I fail, then that means that people who call formerly incarcerated people, you know, dirtbags and, you know, all the other names they come up with for us, that means that they're correct. And I'm trying to change the narrative on that. Because there are so many success stories from people coming out of prison and the people that are still inside working on themselves, right? Every step that I make that's successful, every interview, every television appearance, everything in print, you know, and stuff that's on social media is inspiring to them. That lets them know that there are opportunities out here. Now, I don't want you or the audience to get it confused. The people that work within the system when I first came home told me that I was gonna fail, that I would not make it to the NBA, that I would not be a sports broadcaster. And in many cases, they didn't do anything to help me succeed. In fact, they kind of handcuffed me in a couple of different places. But when you have no one else to believe in you, you have to believe in yourself, you know? And that's the message that I give back to people that's inside when I get asked those questions. When nobody believes in you, you have to believe in you. You know, and it can't be a false hope, right? I didn't come out with false hope. I knew I had an opportunity with Kent Lacob of the Santa Cruz Warriors. He had already said before I left prison that he would give me an opportunity to be the play-by-play guy for the Santa Cruz Warrior G League team. But I chose not to take that opportunity. I chose to come back to Los Angeles and start with the VBL, the Venice Basketball League. And I started there and worked four weekends. And then their season was over with, and then I got hired by the American Basketball Association to go work with them. And while I was doing the All-Star game for them in March on a Friday, that was same All-Star weekend as NBA All-Star, that Sunday when I checked my email, there was the email in there from Raymond Ritter giving me the invite to come up to the Chase Center, you know. And then after that, after that invite and the work with the Chase Center, that's when the Kelly Clarkson show and Maria Taylor and everybody started calling, you know, and a lot of movie companies are calling and debating and, you know, bidding at the moment to see if they want to do the Showtime Taylor movie. But in the meantime, I met Fatima Amara A, with the Women's Universal Basketball Association. And she and I sat down and talked about visions and what my vision was for a women's professional league and what her vision is. And she's the Western director of the Women's Universal Basketball Association. So we came to a very, very good understanding. And within 2 days after that, I was signed as the lead play-by-play broadcaster for the WUBA, or as I call it, Make Room for the W, right? And I've been calling their games. And they have a playoff and championship coming up in August, and I'll be coming back up to Oakland. And I think the games will be played at Skyline High, and we're going to have everything set up and recorded and, you know, live streamed. And, you know, I'm going to put my stamp on that league. And doing that, to the original question, always gives hope for the people that I left behind bars. Because every time they hear about me succeeding, it makes them know that there's an opportunity for them to succeed in whatever it is they're doing. There's so many guys and women who came home who went back and became successful fathers, mothers, uncles, aunts, sons and daughters. You know, so many of them have their own businesses now, you know, cutting hair, being photographers, you know, printing up cards, whatever it is they're doing. There's so many success stories that don't get told, right? Mine just happens to be the highlight because it's the biggest one yet. But I definitely like talking about the people who have succeeded and the people who have the potential to succeed once they come home.
What separates you from the other inmates who lose their way when they get out?
Having support. You know, a lot of people don't have the type of family support I had when I came home. You know, my family had been waiting for me to come home for 5 or 6 years because the news was always, you know, he's coming. Even though the system does have a lot of people inside that were against me, there were some that were actually helping me along the way, you know. And so that helps as well when you have family support and the support from the state once you get out. That helps as well. And then I had help, like I said, from Golden State Warriors, from Prison Sports Ministry, from Alan Witt, who used to be an ESPN producer from 2000 to 2003, from Branson Wright, who works Branson Wright Films, a division of Sony Pictures. You know, I had a whole slew of people that were reaching out to me based on the movie Cue Ball, who heard about me from there. And so there's a lot of people that want to see me succeed as well, you know. And so when people don't have that same support system, when they don't have that same access to that type of support, it may be easy to go back to drugs. It may be easy to go back to criminal thinking. It may be easy to go back to blaming everybody for your situation and circumstance other than you. You know, I also took advantage of self-help groups in there to address those traumas that I hadn't addressed. You know, mental health wasn't the thing, as specifically in the Black community in the 70s and 80s. It was a stigma that came along with, you know, having to go talk to a psychologist or a psychiatrist. And so the majority of the time you have people self-medicating, and I fell right into the same trap of self-medication. So that's what happens to people when they come out now. They come out, things don't go the way they think they should, plans that they made don't happen as soon as they think they should happen, and you get in a rut. You know, in my case, I knew and had already planned that my dream to get to the NBA wasn't going to take place for 3 to 5 years. So I had plans to work for those 3 or 5 years, waiting for that opportunity to break. I didn't know it was going to take place in 6 months. Had I known it was going to take place in 6 months, I probably would have told the board something different than what I told them.
What was it like when you got that call from Raymond Ritter, a fantastic person?
So I read the email, right? And then I read it again, because I'm like, nah, this is some bullshit. And so I read it again, and I went down and I checked, you know, the bottom of the email, and I seen the championship logos, and I seen the Warrior logo. And I read it again, and I looked at the telephone number, and it was the same number that I seen when I was in the motel room when I first got out of prison, you know. And I got an email from Ray, and then I just busted out crying. You know, it was a dream come true. But again, I had people inside of the system who was telling me I was a failure and I was a loser and I was never going to make it to the NBA. They would never go look at my highlights on YouTube, even though I was asking them to. You know, it was just fit in this box and keep your mouth shut, right? And so when I got that letter, the letter meant that I had to talk to my parole officer, and it had to go up the chain of command for me to get permission to catch a flight up there. And so as I started making the calls and sending copies of the email around, I had people change, literally. Their conversation changed, the tone in their voice changed, you know, and I still had to remain humble doing that. I couldn't get them with the, see, I told you, I couldn't do that, you know, because I still had to remember that I still owed a responsibility to the state. You know, I was still on parole, I was still an ex-con, I was still living in a transition home. So I hadn't really succeeded yet, but I took a major step with that letter from Ray. And I'm telling you, man, I cried, and then when I finished crying, I called my niece up, you know, just like in the piece that Marcus Thompson did in The Athletic. Once I called my niece up, I was all business. But for 20 minutes, I cried like a kid. You know, I was happy, I was overjoyed, I was relieved. You know, my anxiety left. You know, I was smiling, you know, and crying at the same time, because I was living, or I had just received a letter that was part of a dream that started back in, the dream started when Mark Jackson told me that I was better than people at ESPN.
You still get emotional now talking about it.
Yeah. Because, you know, I didn't even know when I was getting out of jail when he told me that. You know, and that gave me hope. That gave me something to focus on and to say, okay, if you see this in me, and I know that you hand down man down, mama, that go that man again, and you're telling me this, and you don't just talk to people, just any, you know, that's not Mark Jackson. He's not just coming over, you know, blowing smoke up people's butt. You know, if he says something, he means it. You know, and that dream started right there of becoming a professional broadcaster, and to get that letter from Ray and get the invite, it was surreal. It was surreal. And like you said, even though it wasn't play by play, and we discussed it, you know, myself and Ray and his people and my manager, we discussed, you know, the difference between being a public address announcer and a play by play broadcaster. And I definitely asked him, I told him, I said, I know you're going to say no, but I'm still going to ask you anyway. Can I put the headset on for the fourth quarter and call the game? He said, you can't do it. I said, well, you know I was going to ask. I told you I was going to ask anyway.
Absolutely.
I just want to put the headset on and let the people hear me, right? But it was very humbling for them to call me up there. And then, and this is my personal opinion. What I'm going to state out my mouth next is my personal opinion. And it's my opinion, and if I'm wrong, so be it. I think that the Warriors asked me to come because they were so comfortable with me and my skills and how I conducted myself off the court that they felt comfortable enough to bring me in, knowing that they were going to catch some heat for the decision that they made. You know, later on, I found out that it was, you know, some NBA officials in New York who was like, man, are you crazy? Are you about to do what? But there's something about Ray, and you know him, and I know him too. Ray knows what he's doing. And once he gets something and he catches a hold to an idea and he thinks it's going to work, and after he does his research, then he's going to invest in it. And I knew that he invested in me when he made that decision, and there was no way I was going to let him down. I wasn't going to have anything pop up on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook where somebody's talking about something I said. I stand by everything I said. And I told Ray that when we were having our conversation. Like, look, man, I'm not, I just spent 26 years in prison. I have opinions that are unpopular in the public, you know, but I stand by them. You don't have to like them, but I definitely stand by it. And he was like, well, do you have any of this other stuff out? No, because a lot of times I just keep my mouth shut, because if it's not in a place for me to speak how I feel, then I don't. You know, I don't just go around spewing stuff. You know, we would have to be in a conversation. And so the Warriors organization were comfortable enough to bring me in, and I came in and did what I was supposed to do, and now I'm reaping the benefits of that, and, you know, as anybody should.
Were you nervous that night, and were you surprised at how emotional you were? Because I saw you tearing up at the mic and, you know, pointing to the rafters?
When I was pointing to the rafters, I was pointing to my nieces. One of them is my manager, another one's the CEO of my company, Elevated Entertainment. And they were sitting up in the blue section with the reporters, and they were up there with Mike Tolagian, who was the director from Cue Ball. They were all sitting in the same section. And so I was pointing up to them a lot. You know, I knew they couldn't hear me. I couldn't hear them, you know, yelling my name, but they knew where I was at, and I could see where they were at, so I was pointing up there a lot. The emotional part was the, like I said on the Kelly Clarkson show, the night before I caught the plane, I woke up 3 times in the middle of the night crying. You know, I knew what I was walking into. You know, I'm 55 years old. I didn't walk into there not understanding what the outcome was going to be. I knew this was going to change my life. And so I took a lot of people and put them in my heart and walked them on that journey with me. You know, people I left inside, you know, people who helped me get to that point, the victims and survivors of crimes, you know, I brought all of those people, the people who I did play-by-play for over 26 years in prison. You know, I took all of them and put them in my heart and went up there. And so during the whole process, from the time I got off the plane and went and had COVID testing, it was COVID testing every day, 3 days, the 8th, the 9th, and the 10th. On the 9th, during the Wizards game, I was sitting next to Matt Pittman, and I'm learning, you know, but I can still feel these people, you know, on my heart. And so after everything is over and the game is over with, and I didn't expect Steph to come over and greet me like he did, right, but he did. And then he told me, this isn't over. I want you to come over here for this post-game interview with me. I'm like, what? And so when we get over there, I can hear Fitz and Kay coming out the little speaker box. And they say, man, let's talk to Showtime. And I could feel it on my heart. It was weighty, you know. And when he said what he said, I had to stop and compose myself. Because everybody that I took with me at that moment yelled out at me. And somebody else asked me right now, I'm a Star Wars fan. And I told them the comparison would be, especially if you're a Star Wars fan, in episode 4 in the beginning when Luke Skywalker and Obi-Wan Kenobi are flying to that particular planet, or they were getting away from Darth Vader and whatnot. And they brought out the Death Star, and they did a practice run on that planet. And then when they popped the planet, Obi-Wan kind of fell back a little bit, right? Because he heard all of the voices from all those people dying instantly, right? And so when I tell people about how I felt that day in front of the mic, I said, it's almost similar to that scene where you just feel everybody pull at you, you know, simultaneously. And I had to stop. I had to gather myself because it wasn't a moment to cry right then. You know, I had to hold it in and I had to get my words together. And so it was a deeply emotional moment.
So cool hanging with Aaron Showtime Taylor. Hey, what was it like for you to have Steph talk to you and then Kent Bazemore come behind and dump the water over your head?
And let me know I wasn't in prison no more. Because in prison, I would have felt Ken behind me. I would have heard him creeping. I would have felt the weight shift behind me in the floor. I would have felt the wind shift behind me, and I'd have turned right around, right? But I hadn't been in prison at that point for 6 months, and I had been working in the public, you know, a lot. So when Steph was talking to me, I'm looking at him, and I'm listening to what he's saying. But my spidey senses were not tingling. And the next thing I know was we got to cool you down and I got water on me, right? And I had to catch myself, right? Because I said, okay, it's just water, don't worry about it, right? And I could hear the laughter and then I knew what it was and I was like, okay, I've been officially baptized as a Golden State Warrior, you know? And that was great.
One of the most fun things I heard about you, I saw in writing, I go, I got to talk to this guy because I see hashtag rebirth of chick. And I know who you're talking about because I grew up in Southern California. I was all about Showtime. I go back to Jerry West and Gail Goodrich and those Lakers. So what impact did the late Chick Hearn have on your life?
So when the NBA was on CBS in the 80s, right, we would turn down the audio on the television and turn up the simulcast on the radio and listen to Chick Hearn, you know. And, you know, Chick Hearn was the man. You know, you had, L.A. had icons at that time. You had Vin Scully over with the Dodgers, right? I forget the guy who was with the Angels, but he was another icon, right?
You had Don Drysdale, Dick Enberg was down there.
Right, and then you had Chick Hearn. So even though you had the iconic, you know, Los Angeles Dodgers, and you had the iconic Los Angeles Lakers, and then you had the California Angels at the time before they switched over to the Anaheim Angels, and I think the Kings were really just starting to get popular right around their time as well. It would maybe have been 2 or 3 years before Wayne Gretzky came to L.A. You had these iconic sports announcers, right, leveled out on the same level as Harry Carey, you know, and John Bose over there in Boston, old school, you know, and the other guy that was over at the Spectrum in Philadelphia, and you had the other voice over in Madison Square Gardens. And then later on, before Chick retired, you had Doc Emrick in the NHL, right? So you had some iconic voices, and Chick stood above all of them. Chicky Baby was the man. Chick had euphemisms that, you know, you'd be listening to him like, what in the hell is Chick talking about? Until you understood what it was when he'd be calling Magic Johnson Buck, right? He's like, Buck is pounding the rock into the concrete out at half court. What? Oh, okay, yeah, he's dribbling the ball kind of hard out there. Or he's yo-yoing the ball up and down. You know, Chick just had those euphemisms that became part of the lexicon of basketball right now today. And I still use them. There's some I'll tell you quick, fast, in a hurry. I'm about to put this game in the refrigerator. You know, I still do the bunny hop and the pea patch. I just still do the mustard just came off the hot dog, because those are euphemisms that if you're a Laker fan or you're a basketball fan and you know about Chick Hearn, then you know what I'm saying. And you know, like you said, you knew who the rebirth of Chick was, but it comes from the rap group Diggable Planets, who had a song called The Rebirth of Slick. Now, when I'm in prison and I'm sitting around trying to figure out, after I got tired of people calling me Chick Hearn because I've been imitating him for so long, they just identified me with him. And so now I'm moving from Baby Chick Hearn into Showtime Taylor. And then that's when I start using Crack-A-Latin. And then I went into the face, that is in the face, a deep 3-point facial exfoliation. Or, he massaged his cheeks, you know. Anything that the euphemisms that I was bringing together were giving myself a stamp. But I was never going to separate myself from Chick Hearn. So when I'm looking back into the lexicon of song names in hip hop, and I looked at the Diggable Planets, the Rebirth of Slick, and I said, you know what, I'm going to start calling myself the Rebirth of Chick instead of the Rebirth of Slick. And those people who know Chick Hearn and know that I'm doing play-by-play is going to automatically know who I'm talking about. And the youngsters that don't know, because see, when I first got home, my nieces and nephews, they're all millennials. They told me to drop the name Rebirth of Chick. They literally told me to forget it, dump it in the trash can. I'm like, what? They like, man, you need to find another name, because nobody knows who Chick Hearn is. And if they do know who he is, it's all old people and you trying to attract some new people. Now they're ready to go out and get Rebirth of Chick shirts made. Now they're trying to get Rebirth of Chick hats made. You know, they want to get handkerchiefs, boots, shoes, all this stuff with Rebirth of Chick on it now, because now they understand, you know, what they didn't understand before, that anybody identifying themselves with that specific individual has to be the quote-unquote S-H-I-T. And so because I'm calling myself that, and I have no problem telling anybody when they ask me, I am the best play-by-play basketball announcer that the country has not heard of yet.
Hey, no, you actually touched on something, because when I feel like I'm good, I have to have in my mind, I am the best announcer in the world right now. Maybe I'm not, but at least that's what I'm saying to myself. It's going to help me bring my game to the next level. And during those 2 hours, nobody can touch me.
And that's how I have to be. That's how anybody sitting in that seat has to be. And to show you what I'm talking about, it may have been 2 weeks after I came out of the Chase Center and I start making that statement that I'm the best play-by-play basketball announcer in the country. And soon y'all are going to give me a headset. And when you do, somebody's about to lose their job, right? Soon after I start making that statement, I started noticing and I started listening on the NCAA level and the NBA level. A lot of those guys start picking their game up because before they heard about Aaron Showtime Taylor, guys would be setting up. They weren't even calling the game. They would be setting up talking about a joke they heard at a bar and missing plays taking place on television. And me sitting around hungry, you know, I'm the challenger. I'm looking to get the title. And I want a shot at the title. And I'm sitting there watching a game like this saying, look, you're missing this, you're missing that, you're missing this. And what is this joke you're talking about, this inside stuff? Like, you're really in the – no, you're not in the game. And when people start hearing about me, I'm going to show you how you're supposed to call this game. Well, like I said, about 2 weeks after that, I noticed that people started picking the game up. Even Mike Breen on ABC, ESPN, started getting more excited about his game. And I said, okay, just as long as I know that I'm sitting here and people are starting to hear about me, somebody's going to lose their job. I just don't know who's going to lose their job. But somebody's going to lose their job. I'm going to have a headset. And once I get that headset on, I'm not relinquishing it. I'm shooting for the number one spot.
One more Chick Hearn thing then. Offensive player has the ball, pump fake. The defender jumps in the air, so that defender was put in the blank.
In the popcorn machine.
Okay, I know.
Listen, if Chick Hearn came back as a 55-year-old ex-con black man, you'd be looking at him right now.
Yeah. Aaron, besides the adversity of, you know, serving all that time in prison and making this change, isn't there also a message that you have to other people that it's not too late? Regardless of what you've been, I mean, most people aren't going to think about 55 years old, I'm going to be a play-by-play announcer. Are you bullshitting me? But you have that vision, no matter what it is. I'm going to be an actor. I'm going to be an artist, whatever it is, that, you know what? It's not too late.
It's never too late. My mind was set here. When I found out I was going to the board, I automatically said, okay, you're going to get out the first time you go. So let's start looking at your options. Okay, when you get out, you're going to be 54. It's going to be a month before your 55th birthday. That means from 5th, you're going to have an opportunity to have a career in sports broadcasting. If you can make it happen, you're going to start at 55, and you could possibly go to 80 years old, maybe 85. Now, to show you the point I'm making, Marv Albert just retired at 80. Hubie Brown is still going, and he's 82 or 83, I think. You know, I don't know if the czar of the telestrator is still around. I haven't seen, right? But if the czar of the telestrator is still around, then he's in his late 70s, early 80s. So as long as your vision is good and your mind is sharp, you can have a job in sports broadcasting. So that's how I was looking at it. I can do this from the age 55 to age 80, maybe even 85 if I stay healthy, right? Okay, that means I have a possible 25 to 30 year career to look at. Right. So I have to get out and hit the ground running. I have to get out and I have to move. I don't have time to sit around and do the floss stuff that the youngsters would want to do. If they got signed to a contract, they got to go get the gold. They got to get the car. They got to get the girl. And then they got to, you know, try to maintain it. No, I don't have to do that. I'm 55 years old. I was blessed not to even go after a woman after 26 years in prison until Memorial Day weekend. I stayed focused on going after the business first, and then once I got those foundations laid down, then the universe brought me the perfect woman for me, right? Her name is Sharon Santiago, right? And guess where I met her at?
Where?
On TikTok, where I spent the majority of my time downloading when I wasn't running around doing work and whatnot. I go to TikTok and I make videos because it was a good stress reliever. And I met her on there. I'm at her house now in Lake Elsinore. This is where I come to relax and get away from the world. That's why I didn't watch the basketball game, because it wasn't important to me at spending time with her, because she helps me relax.
Hey, one thing about this relationship that you kind of triggered to me is that when you're focused on making yourself a better person, working on your life, you're going to attract better people in your life rather than, hey, I need to go find some woman, and you don't have your life together.
True, very true. And even more, and this would be a suggestion for anybody who's getting out of prison who may hear this, woman or man, right? Or somebody's in the process of changing their life. You can't go chasing after anything that doesn't have anything to do with your self-improvement. You're not, you have to put it in your head, I'm not ready for a relationship until I'm ready for a relationship. And the only way you're ready for a relationship is if you have the ability to take care of yourself, to make good and sound decisions, not making decisions on a whim, but making good sound decisions, making sure that your platform and your foundation is rock steady. And the places where it's not rock steady, you'll find somebody who can help you seal in those things and, you know, round off those edges and make sure that the platform spreads broader along with you, rather than you struggling and then trying to look for somebody because you're only focused on your lower nature. This is a path where you have to be focused on your higher nature, and you have to sacrifice a lot so that when the time comes for you to be ready, like you just said, the right person is brought into your life. You don't have to go looking for them. You find them in some of the most unusual places. Who in the world would have thought that I found a woman that I fell in love with on TikTok?
Hey, Aaron, how did that happen? How did that connection happen on TikTok?
So the millennials in my family, my nieces, the manager and CEO, once we came out of San Francisco, they said, well, the whole world's changed now. I said, what are you talking about? They said, well, you just can't do duets with anybody and be loading them on your Instagram and your TikTok pages anymore. I was like, what are you talking about? They said, anybody who's seen on camera with you is going to automatically be under scrutiny because now you're officially Aaron Showtime Taylor. So you have to be careful who you do things with. Now, granted, I thought it was some nonsense, but I still left myself open for the possibility that I just missed something and they saw it. So I sat down and I thought about everybody that I did duets with and who I posted them with. And the person who did the best duets with me happened to be Sharon Santiago. So I left a message saying, hey, call me, I need to talk to you. And so when we finally spoke, I told her, hey, you know, I'm a sports broadcaster, you know. I did lives on TikTok, so everybody knew I'd been in prison and whatnot, but I really went into details with her, and then I told her, I said, so if I post a duet with you, it's a possibility you may start getting some press coverage. People are going to want to know who you are, right? And she said, okay, well, you know, I'm game, you know. You know, I think I can handle that. And at the time, she wasn't looking for anybody, and I didn't know I was looking for somebody. I think that might have lasted 5 days. And then we found out we was looking for each other.
What duet?
They're beautiful ever since.
What duet or duets did you sing together?
Oh man, we got a whole bunch of duets together. But at the time, "Solid as a Rock" by Ashford and Simpson, "Moves Like Jagger" with Maroon 5 and with Christina Aguilera. There was also what is the name of that slow song? "Spend My Life" with Tamia and Eric Benet.
That's a great song.
Right, there were songs like that that we had did, and I mean, people liked it. The energy was there, you know, and specifically with that Maroon 5 featuring Christina Aguilera, the energy was really there. It was really high. And so it was a challenge for me because I had been used to long-distance relationships from prison, from a prison cell talking to somebody, right? But when I found out that she was right here in Lake Elsinore, you know, 75 miles away from L.A., that's not Chicago. That's not across the country. That's here in Southern California, you know. And you know what? I think I need to come drive out there and see you. And she is the love of my life. She is completed parts of me that have been closed. You know, when you're a heterosexual man and you go into an all-male prison for 26 years, there's certain things about who you are that you have to shut down. You know, and there were parts of me that I had to literally shut down so I could survive for 26 years. And meeting Sharon helped me to open up some of those parts that I had closed off, you know, and, you know, open up those old ancient doors again, you know, and knock the cobwebs off and, you know, the water bugs and the beetles and stuff, you know, and brush all that stuff out and come in and buff it back up and get it shiny again and, you know, start to understand who I was in those quarters that I had to close off to survive for 26 years inside of prison. you know, and it's been one of the most beautiful things that I felt. And to have her help me evolve in that area to become a more complete human being, right, is something that I cherish, you know, and as long as she'll have me, I'll be there for her. When she gets tired of me, she can do what she wants.
That evolution too, Aaron, of exposing yourself and, you know, having an adult relationship, I'm sure that's still happening, right? That you haven't just mastered it where you know, hey, you open up your chest and there you go. You're still learning.
No, I've never mastered it. This is the closest I've come, to actually having a relationship where it's not 50-50. It's 100-100. You know, where I can totally be me. I don't have to hide parts of myself. The fears, the passions, the anxiety, you know, the nervousness, you know, all parts of who I am, you know, I can open up and show to this woman. And I don't have to worry about being judged. I don't have to worry about me saying something one day and a week later, if we get in an argument, it's used against me. You know, it's a total, like the phrase you use, adult relationship, where communication is the foundation. Communication is the foundation that love was built on. And then trust was built above that, right? And then we laugh and have so much fun. It's like, you know, you'd have to put it in this phrase. The first 6 months of any relationship, we have that every day. Every day. Now, I know a lot of relationships, after 6 months, you guys get used to each other, you know. You may still be learning something new, but after about 6 months, there's really not too many surprises jumping off. But we have that every day. And it's probably one of the things that completed who I am as a person at this point and allows me to continue to pursue my passion of play-by-play, right? And one of the decisions that I spoke to her about was signing up for this women's basketball league, because I want to support the women's game as well. So signing up for the Women's Universal Basketball Association was a decision that I made in partnership, not just on my own. You see what I'm saying? And it's good to have somebody with you that you can turn to and know that they're going to give you the advice you need, not the advice you want.
Where would you be willing to go to keep chasing this? And obviously that relationship would be challenged at the very least if she doesn't go along with you.
She'll come. If I have to go to Mars, Pluto, Omega Star, I don't know, wherever I have to end up at, in one of the other ends of the Milky Way, if I'm going someplace to call a dart game, shoot marbles, have a spitting contest, if they're playing Tiddlywinks and they need a play-by-play announcer there, and they're having that Tiddlywink game over in Tibet, we'll suit up and go.
I thought of something. I asked Larry about this too. What about doing play-by-play for a pro league in another country? Like, yeah,
I would love, wouldn't it? I would love to go to the CBA. I'll go to the Chinese Basketball Association. I will go to the Australian Basketball League, New Zealand, Turkey, Greece, Israel. I'm willing to go anywhere. I would go to the African League that they just started, right? I'm willing to go anywhere to call a basketball game. As long as the product on the court is good, I'm going to sound great. If the game sucks, then my play-by-play is going to suck. But if the product on the court is good, and the CBA has some really, really good players, a lot of ex-NBA players over there, right? The same over in the European League. They got some really good ex-NBA players, or people striving hard to get to the NBA that's on the hardwood. And so those games are played at a high level, right? And so I would be willing to go over there and do that. The Eastern European League, Western Europe, I don't care. And it doesn't have to just be basketball. I can call football, baseball, badminton, ping pong, arm wrestling. I don't care what it is. I'm going to pump it up. It's going to have the Showtime stamp on it, right? So whatever the sport is, if you want Aaron Showtime Taylor, man, hit me up. I'm willing to go.
Could Showtime make curling sound dope?
Yeah.
Because that's a tough one.
Dope. I can make curling sound dope. And like you said, curling is tough, but there's three or four people involved in curling that would give me an opportunity to talk about what they're doing as curlers. It can happen. Listen, man, I can make rolling hair sound exciting.
Man, I can't wait. You're going places, I can tell. And I think you're an inspiration for folks that have been through adversity in your life. I mean, I can see you speaking in an auditorium with thousands of people, telling your story and inspiring folks that, hey, no matter what you've been, as you said, you can be better than what you are now.
You have to strive for that. You have to strive. You can never, I mean, like I said, I got out at 55 years old. I didn't get out thinking my life was over. I got out thinking my life is just beginning. You know, it's perspective. If your perspective is messed up, then the way that you view the world is going to be messed up. If your perspective is set and proper in reality, then that's how you're going to view the world. And so I got out thinking, okay, I'm 55 years old. I got this golden opportunity. I got 25 to 30 years to get this thing done. I gotta hurry up and get going into motion.
Oh, Aaron, I want to make sure before we jet that I give some love to Tobias Tubbs, because I saw him on the Kelly Clarkson show and was a great influence in your personal turnaround behind bars. How was that connection? How did you make that, and what did he mean to you?
So when I met Tobias, I was still extremely angry. You know, Islam is supposed to be a religion that's supposed to be about peace. I didn't have any peace in my life, yet I was calling myself a Muslim, right? And so when I met him, one of his first questions was, why you got a frown on your face? Why is your fist balled up? How are you supposed to be at peace, but your whole presentation is anger? And nobody had never really pointed that out to me, because everybody around me was angry all the time. You know, and when you asked us why, I got 50 to life, but I wasn't taking personal accountability and responsibility on why I got 50 to life. I was still blaming everybody other than myself. And so once he pointed out about my face and my body language, then he started pointing out about responsibility. And he used the religion that we both shared to point it out to me. And so either I was going to be a hypocrite, or I was going to start to focus on those things and make proper adjustments. And so even though he was 5 years younger than me, he became a father figure to me, because he started guiding me toward the things that I needed so that I could survive and have be mentally healthy at the end of this trip. You know, and so he became a father figure, he became a big brother, he became a teacher, a mentor, an imam, right? And as well as my friend. And our relationship developed over 17 years of writing letters, because we were only physically around each other for about 8 or 9 months. And everything else evolved over writing letters to each other for 17 years. And so when Kelly Clarkson's people asked me who was my mentor, it was no question for me to call out my partner, you know, and tell him, hey, man, I need you to come on the show with me, because he had a message that needed to be heard just as well as mine needed to be heard. And with my name being Aaron, and for those listeners who are familiar with their Bibles, Aaron is the brother of Moses. Moses may have led the people out of Egypt, but Aaron was the one that was doing the talking. You know, and so since I'm a play-by-play announcer.
You're doing the talking.
I was doing the most talking.
He said, can you love yourself and other people? If you speak from the heart, you can change hearts. And that was a transformation for you.
Definitely. Definitely. Because I had a mask on. The mask was the frown. The mask kept you away from knowing who I really was. I've always been a good guy, that I was doing bad stuff because I was trying to impress everybody other than myself. I wanted to have other people think certain ways about me because I thought that their opinion meant something to me. When I got to the point where their opinion didn't mean anything to me and it was about how I felt inside, that's when I started to become a man and evolve into manhood. And so once that evolution began, there was no going back, you know, and that was all due to my boy Tobias, you know. He helped me to see something that I hadn't seen in myself. you know, and then help me to develop it to the point to where I spoke about earlier about me having being play-by-play for those games 5 days a week, three games a day. When we weren't playing basketball, I was talking to those guys too and being the same thing to them that Tobias was to me. And that's how we're still functioning now. You know, there are a lot of people that hear my voice or, you know, hit me up on one of my DMs on one of the platforms. They just need somebody to talk to where they can take the mask off. You know, and know that you're not going to be judged. I'm not here to tell you, you know, beat you over the head. Once you tell me what the issue is, and I'm going to give you an answer. If you don't do it, that's on you. But here's what you have to do. And the first thing is take personal accountability and responsibility.
Yours is such a great story, but you and I both know it's only partially written. There's a lot more to go.
Yeah. Man, I appreciate you calling me up, man. You hit me up after the show. You weren't the only one, but you were the first one I responded to. So this turned out to be great. I appreciate you having me on and us having this conversation.
Coming to a microphone near you, that's Aaron Showtime Taylor. Our executive producer is Hunter Lewis. You can subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, YouTube, and iHeartRadio. Your positive feedback, the five-star comments are huge along with your subscriptions. Thank you so much for listening. And we'll talk to you next time.